Chapter 35. Intention. But the bishop had personal weaknesses that were fatal to sympathy for more than a moment. Then I may speak in confidence to you as her nearest relative, apostrophe said the prelate, and explain that I am now in a position with regard to Lady Constantine which, in view of the important office I hold, I should not have cared to place myself in, unless I had felt quite sure of not being refused by her. And hence it is a great grief, and some mortification to me, that I was refused owing, of course, to the fact that I unwittingly risked making my proposal at the very moment when she was under the influence of those strange tidings, and therefore not herself, and scarcely able to judge what was best for her. The bishop's words disclosed a mind whose sensitive fear of danger to its own dignity hindered it from criticism elsewhere. Things might have been worse for Louis' Puck-like idea of mismating his Hermia with this Demetrius. Throwing a strong color of earnestness into his mien, he replied, Bishop, Viviette is my only sister. I am her only brother and friend. I am alarmed for her health and state of mind. Hence I have come to consult you on this very matter that you have broached. I come absolutely without her knowledge, and I hope unconventionality may be excused in me on the score of my anxiety for her. Certainly. I trust that the prospect opened up by my proposal, combined with this other news, has not proved too much for her. My sister is distracted and distressed, Bishop Helmsdale. She wants comfort. Not distressed by my letter? Said the bishop, turning red. Has it lowered me in her estimation? On the contrary. While your disinterested offer was uppermost in her mind, she was a different woman. It is this other matter that oppresses her. The result upon her of the recent discovery with regard to the late Sir Blount Constantine is peculiar. To say that he ill-used her in his lifetime is to understate a truth. He has been dead now a considerable period, but this revival of his memory operates as a sort of terror upon her. Images of the manner of Sir Blount's death are with her night and day, intensified by a hideous picture of the supposed scene, which was cruelly sent her. She dreads being alone. Nothing will restore my poor Viviette to her former cheerfulness, but a distraction, a hope, a new prospect. That is precisely what acceptance of my offer would afford. Said Louis, with great respect. But how to get her to avail herself of it, after once refusing you, is the difficulty, and my earnest problem. Then we are quite at one. We are. And it is to promote our wishes that I am come, since she will do nothing of herself. Then you can give me no hope of a reply to my second communication? None whatever by letter, said Louis. Her impression plainly is that she cannot encourage your lordship. Yet, in the face of all this reticence, the secret is that she loves you warmly. Can you indeed assure me of that? Indeed. Said the good bishop musingly. Then I must try to see her. I begin to feel strongly that a course which would seem premature and unbecoming in other cases would be true and proper conduct in this. Her unhappy dilemmas, her unwonted position, yes, I see it all. I can afford to have some little misconstruction put upon my motives. I will go and see her immediately. Her past has been a cruel one. She wants sympathy, and with heaven's help I'll give it. I think the remedy lies that way, said Louis gently. Some words came from her one night which seemed to show it. I was standing on the terrace. I heard somebody sigh in the dark, and found that it was she. I asked her what was the matter, and gently pressed her on this subject of boldly and promptly contracting a new marriage as a means of dispersing the horrors of the old. Her answer implied that she would have no objection to do it, and to do it at once, provided she could remain externally passive in the matter, that she would tacitly yield, in fact, to pressure, but would not meet solicitation halfway. Now, Bishop Helmsdale, you see what has prompted me. On the one hand is a dignitary of high position and integrity, to say no more, who is anxious to save her from the gloom of her situation. On the other is this sister, who will not make known to you her willingness to be saved partly from apathy, partly from a fear that she may be thought forward in responding favorably at so early a moment, partly also, perhaps, from a modest sense that there would be some sacrifice on your part in allying yourself with a woman of her secluded and sad experience. Oh, there is no sacrifice. Quite otherwise. I care greatly for this alliance, Mr. Glanville. Your sister is very dear to me. Moreover, the advantages her mind would derive from the enlarged field of activity that the position of a bishop's wife would afford are palpable. I am induced to think that an early settlement of the question and immediate coming to the point which might be called too early in the majority of cases would be a right and considerate tenderness here. My only dread is that she should think an immediate following up of the subject premature. And the risk of a rebuff a second time is one which, as you must perceive, it would be highly unbecoming in me to run. I think the risk would be small if your lordship would approach her frankly. Right, she will not, I am assured. And knowing that, and having her interest at heart, I was induced to come to you and make this candid statement in reply to your communication. Her late husband, having been virtually dead these 4 or 5 years, believed dead 2 years, and actually dead nearly one, no reproach could attach to her if she were to contract another union tomorrow. I agree with you, Mr. Glanville, said the bishop warmly. I will think this over. Her motive in not replying I can quite understand. Your motive in coming I can also understand and appreciate in a brother. If I feel convinced that it would be a seemly and expedient thing, I will come to Welland tomorrow. The point to which Louis had brought the bishop being so satisfactory, he feared to endanger it by another word. He went away almost hurriedly, and at once left the precincts of the cathedral, lest another encounter with Dr. Helmsdale should lead the latter to take a new and slower view of his duties as Viviette's suitor. He reached Welland by dinner time, and came upon Viviette in the same pensive mood in which he had left her. It seemed as he had hardly moved since. Have you discovered Swithin St. Cleeve's address? She said, without looking up at him. No, said Louis. Then she broke out with indescribable anguish. But you asked me to wait till this evening, and I have waited through the long day, in the belief that your words meant something, and that you would bring good tidings. And now I find your words meant nothing, and you have not brought good tidings. Louis could not decide for a moment what to say to this. Should he venture to give her thoughts a new course by a revelation of his design? No. It would be better to prolong her despair yet another night, and spring relief upon her suddenly, that she might jump at it, and commit herself without an interval for reflection on certain aspects of the proceeding. Nothing, accordingly, did he say, and conjecturing that she would be hardly likely to take any desperate step that night, he left her to herself. His anxiety at this crisis continued to be great. Everything depended on the result of the bishop's self-communion. Would he or would he not come the next day? Perhaps instead of his important presence there would appear a letter postponing the visit indefinitely. If so, all would be lost. Louis' suspense kept him awake, and he was not alone in his sleeplessness. Through the night he heard his sister walking up and down, in a state which betokened that for every pang of grief she had disclosed, twice as many had remained unspoken. He almost feared that she might seek to end her existence by violence, so unreasonably sudden were her moods. and he lay and longed for the day. It was morning. She came down the same as usual, and asked if there had arrived any telegram or letter, but there was neither. Louis avoided her, knowing that nothing he could say just then would do her any good. No communication had reached him from the bishop, and that looked well. By one ruse and another, as the day went on, he led her away from contemplating the remote possibility of hearing from Swithin, and induced her to look at the worst contingency as her probable fate. It seemed as if she really made up her mind to this, for by the afternoon she was apathetic, like a woman who neither hoped nor feared. And then a fly drove up to the door. Louis, who had been standing in the hall the greater part of that day, glanced out through a private window, and went to Viviette. "The bishop has called," apostrophe he said. "Be ready to see him." Apostrophe, "the bishop of Melchester?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Viviette, bewildered. "Yes. I asked him to come. He comes for an answer to his letters." Apostrophe, "an answer to his letters?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, she murmured. "An immediate reply of yes or no." Apostrophe, apostrophe, her face showed the workings of her mind. How entirely an answer of assent, at once acted on for better or for worse, would clear the specter from her path, there needed no tongue to tell. It would, moreover, accomplish that end without involving the impoverishment of Swithin, the inevitable result, if as he had adopted the legitimate road out of her trouble. Hitherto there had seemed to her dismayed mind, unenlightened as to any course, save one of honesty, no possible achievement of both her desires, the saving of Swithin and the saving of herself. But behold, here was a way. A tempter had shown it to her. It involved a great wrong, which to her had quite obscured its feasibility. But she perceived now that it was indeed a way. Nature was forcing her hand at this game, and to what will not nature compel her weaker victims, in extremes? Louis left her to think it out. When he reached the drawing room, Dr. Helmsdale was standing there with the air of a man too good for his destiny, which, to be just to him, was not far from the truth this time. "Have you broken my message to her?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked the bishop sonorously. "Not your message, your visit," apostrophe, said Louis. "I leave the rest in your lordship's hands. I have done all I can for her." Apostrophe, she was in her own small room today, and, feeling that it must be a bold stroke or none, he led the bishop across the hall till he reached her apartment, and opened the door. But instead of following, he shut it behind his visitor. Then Glanville passed an anxious time. He walked from the foot of the staircase to the star of old swords and pikes on the wall, from these to the stag's horns, thence down the corridor as far as the door, where he could hear murmuring inside, but not its import. The longer they remained close at it, the more excited did he become. That as he had not peremptorily negatived the proposal at the outset, was a strong sign of its success. It showed that as he had admitted argument, and the worthy bishop had a pleader on his side whom he knew little of. The very weather seemed to favor Dr. Helmsdale in his suit. A blusterous wind had blown up from the west, howling in the smokeless chimneys, and suggesting to the feminine mind storms at sea, a tossing ocean, and the hopeless inaccessibility of all astronomers and men on the other side of the same. The bishop had entered Viviette's room at 3:10. The long hand of the hall clock lay level at 4:45, when the knob of the door moved, and he came out. Louis met him, where the passage joined the hall. Dr. Helmsdale was decidedly in an emotional state, his face being slightly flushed. Louis looked his anxious inquiry without speaking it. "She accepts me," apostrophe said the bishop in a low voice. "And the wedding is to be soon. Her long solitude and sufferings justify haste. What you said was true. Sheer weariness and distraction have driven her to me. She was quite passive at last, and agreed to anything I proposed, such as the persuasive force of trained logical reasoning. A good and wise woman, she perceived what a true shelter from sadness was offered in me, and was not the one to despise heaven's gift. apostrophe apostrophe XL, the silence of Swithin was to be accounted for by the circumstance that neither to the Mediterranean nor to America had he in the first place directed his steps. Feeling himself absolutely free, he had, on arriving at Southampton, decided to make straight for the Cape, and hence had not gone aboard the Occidental at all. His object was to leave his heavier luggage there, examine the capabilities of the spot for his purpose, find out the necessity or otherwise of shipping over his own equatorial, and then cross to America as soon as there was a good opportunity. Here he might inquire the movements of the transit expedition to the South Pacific, and join it at such a point as might be convenient. Thus, though wrong in her premises, Vivian had intuitively decided with sad precision. There was, as a matter of fact, a great possibility of her not being able to communicate with him for several months, notwithstanding that he might possibly communicate with her. This excursive time was an awakening for Swithin. Two altered circumstances inevitably followed altered views. That such changes should have a marked effect upon a young man who had made neither grand tour nor petty one, who had, in short, scarcely been away from home in his life, was nothing more than natural. New ideas struggled to disclose themselves, and with the addition of strange twinklers to his southern horizon, came an absorbed attention that way, and a corresponding forgetfulness of what lay to the north behind his back, whether human or celestial. Whoever may deplore it, few will wonder that Viviette, who till then had stood high in his heaven, if as he had not dominated it, sank, like the North Star, lower and lower with his retreat southward. Master of a large advance of his first year's income in circular notes, he perhaps too readily forgot that the mere act of honor, but for her self-suppression, would have rendered him penniless. Meanwhile, to come back and claim her at the specified time, 4 years thence, if she should not object to be claimed, was as much a part of his program as were the exploits abroad and elsewhere that were to prelude it. The very thoroughness of his intention for that advanced date inclined him all the more readily to shelve the subject now. Her unhappy caution to him not to write too soon was a comfortable license in his present state of tension about Sublime. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.